Chapter 71. Giordino took up his station on the platform bordering the tracks. In one hand, he held a large flashlight. The wind had died down to 10 miles an hour, and by keeping to the corner of the depot, he was sheltered from the sweeping rain. Chase was not so lucky. He stood huddled atop the handcar a quarter of a mile up the track. For perhaps the 10th time, he dried off the battery terminals and checked the wires leading to the locomotive headlamp and sound speakers that were jury-rigged on the front of the handcar. Pitt stepped to the doorway and made a signal with his hand. Giordino acknowledged it and then jumped down onto the track bed and blinked his flashlight into the darkness. "About damn time," Chase mumbled to himself as he pushed the battery switch and began pumping the hand levers. The headlamp's beam glinted on the wet rails, and the whistle shriek was swept ahead by a following gust of wind. Pitt hesitated, timing in his mind the advance of the handcar. Satisfied that Chase was approaching at a good clip, he re-entered the office and absorbed the warmth from the stove. "We're rolling," he said briefly. "What do you hope to learn by recreating the robbery?" asked McGee. "I'll know better in a few minutes," Pitt replied evasively. "I think it's exciting," Annie bubbled. "Annie, you act out the role of Hiram Meacham, the telegrapher, while I play the station agent, Sam Harding," Pitt instructed. "Mr. McGee, you're the authority. I'll leave it to you to take the part of Clement Massey and lead us through the events step by step."
"I'll try," McGee said, "but it's impossible to reconstruct the exact dialogue and movements of 75 years ago.
"We won't need a perfect performance," Pitt grinned. "A simple run-through will do fine." McGee shrugged.
"Okay. Let's see, Meacham was seated at the table in front of the chessboard. Harding had just taken a call from the dispatcher in Albany, so he was standing near the phone when Massey entered. He walked to the doorway and turned around, holding out his hand in simulation of a gun. The locomotive sounds drew nearer and mingled with the occasional boom of thunder. He stood there a few seconds listening, and then he nodded his head.
"This is a hold-up," he said.
Annie looked at Pitt, unsure of what to do or say.
"After the surprise wore off," said Pitt, "the railroad men must have put up an argument."
"Yes. When I interviewed Sam Harding, he said they tried to tell Massey there was no money in the depot, but he wouldn't listen. He insisted that one of them open the safe."
"They hesitated," Pitt conjectured.
"In the beginning," said McGee, his voice taking on a hollow tone. "Then Harding agreed, but only if he could flag the train first. Massey refused, claiming it was a trick. He became impatient and fired a bullet through Meacham's chessboard."
Annie hesitated, a blank look on her face. Then, carried away by her imagination, she swept the board off the table and scattered the chess pieces over the floor.
"Harding begged, tried to explain that the bridge was out. Massey would have none of it."
The headlamp beam on the handcar flashed through the window. Pitt could see that McGee's eyes were looking into another time. "Then what happened?" Pitt prompted.
"Meacham grabbed a lantern and made an attempt to reach the platform and stop the train. Massey shot him in the hip."
Pitt turned. "Annie, if you please."
Annie rose from her chair, made a few steps toward the door, and eased down in a reclining position on the floor. The handcar was only 100 yards away now. Pitt could read the dates on the calendar hanging on the wall from the headlamp.
"The door," Pitt snapped. "Open or closed?"
McGee paused, trying to think. "Quickly, quickly," Pitt urged.
"Massey had kicked it closed."
Pitt pushed the door shut.
"Next move?"
"Open that damn safe."
"Yes, Massey's very words, according to Harding."
Pitt hurried over and knelt in front of the old iron safe. 5 seconds later, the handcar, with Chase pumping up a sweat, rolled by on the track outside, the bass of the speakers reverberating throughout the old wooden building. Giordino stood and swung the flashlight at the windows in a wide circular motion, making it seem to those inside that the beam was flickering past the window glass in the wake of the handcar. The only sound missing was the clack of the steel coach wheels. A shiver crept up McGee's spine and gripped him all the way to the scalp. He felt as if he had touched the past, a past he had never truly known. Annie lifted herself from the floor and put her arms around his waist. She looked up into his face, her expression strangely penetrating.
"It was so real," McGee murmured.
all so damn real.
That's because our reenactment was the way it happened back in 1914, said Pitt.
McGee turned and stared at Pitt.
But there was the real Manhattan Limited then.
Pitt shook his head.
There was no Manhattan Limited then.
You're wrong. Harding and Meacham saw it.
They were tricked, Pitt said quietly.
That can't be, McGee began, then stopped, his eyes wide in uncomprehension.
He started over.
Well, that can't be. They were experienced railroad men. They couldn't be fooled.
Meacham was lying wounded on the floor. The door was closed. Harding was bent over the safe, his back to the tracks. All they saw were lights. All they heard were sounds. Sounds from an old gramophone recording of a passing train.
But the bridge, it collapsed under the weight of the train. That couldn't be faked.
Massey blew the bridge in sections. He knew one big bang would have alerted half the valley. So he detonated small charges of black powder at key structure points, coinciding the blasts with the thunderclaps, until the center span finally gave way and dropped in the river.
McGee, still puzzled, said nothing.
The robbery of the station was only a sham, a cover-up. Massey had bigger things on his mind than a measly $18. He was after a $2 million gold coin shipment carried on the Manhattan Limited.
Why go to all the trouble? McGee asked doubtfully. He could have simply stopped the train, held it up, and made off with the coins.
That's how Hollywood might have filmed it, said Pitt. But in real life, there's always a catch. The coins in question were $20 pieces called St. Gaudens. They each weighed close to 1 ounce. Simple arithmetic tells us that it took 100,000 coins to make $2 million. Then allow 16 ounces to a pound, do a little dividing, and you come up with a shipment weighing over 3 tons. Not exactly a bundle a few men could unload and haul away before railroad officials figured the cause of the train's delay and sent a posse charging down the tracks.
All right, said Giordino, I'll bite and ask the question on everyone's mind. If the train didn't pass through here and take a dive in the Hudson, where did it go?
I think Massey took over the locomotive, diverted the train off the main track, and hid it where it remains to this day. If Pitt had claimed to be a visitor from Venus or the reincarnation of Napoleon Bonaparte, his words couldn't have received a more dubious reception.
McGee looked downright apathetic. Only Annie had a thoughtful expression.
In some respects, Mr. Pitt's theory isn't as far-fetched as it sounds, she said.
McGee stared at her as if she was an errant child. Not one passenger or crewman who survived to tell the tale, or a robber confessing on a deathbed, not even a corpse to point a finger, not a fragment from an entire train come to light after all these years, not possible.
It would have to be the greatest vanishing act of all time, added Chase.
Pitt did not look as though he was listening to the conversation. He suddenly turned to McGee. How far is Albany from here?
About 25 miles. Why do you ask?
The last time anyone saw the Manhattan Limited up close was when it left the Albany station.
But surely you can't really believe.
People believe what they want to believe, said Pitt. Myths, ghosts, religion, and the supernatural. My belief is that a cold, tangible entity has simply been misplaced for 75 years in a place where nobody thought to look.
McGee sighed. What are your plans?
Pitt looked surprised at the question.
I'm going to eyeball every inch of the deserted track bed between here and Albany, he said grimly, until I find the remains of an old rail spur that leads to nowhere.